So, if you want to start a fight with sheep farmers, other than criticizing their dogs, one of the ways to do it, one of the guaranteed ways to do it, is to talk about hogget lambing, in my experience. On paper, the sums are compelling, and we're going to talk about that tonight. Having a lamb to offset 1 year's worth of grazing, particularly with current wool prices, is a pretty attractive option. But then there are always those dark tales you hear, especially over a beer at the end of a field day, about pulling every second lamb or every lamb out of hoggets, or a ewe class, a year of ewes that end up stunted for the rest of their lives and are always annoying to the farmer who has a look at them. And in addition, it's certainly pondered from time to time that what we gain at the front end, so we get a lamb out of her as a hogget, maybe we lose it at the back end. So a ewe drops out of the flock earlier, dies, or just doesn't get back in lamb for whatever reason, or her production drops off on those last years, the old longevity or stayability, as our geneticists call it. So we're joined tonight by a scientist who has probably done as much work as anybody, certainly in New Zealand, probably around the world on the topic. And I've known Paul Kenyon, our guest tonight, for quite some time, and I know he's not afraid to wade into those woolshed rumbles about hogget lambing and the rights and wrongs and how to get it right. So welcome along, Paul. Before we hook into the discussion, the usual thing with this is to have a guest introduce themselves and give us some background. So how about the potted history? What's your role now, and basically how do you end up where you are?
Thanks, Aaron. I'm currently the head of the Institute of Veterinary Animal and Biomedical Sciences, which is MS University, which is a very long title that summarises the group that has the vet school and the animal science part of agriculture. So I've been in that role for 3 years. Prior to that role, I was pretty much dedicated sheep and beef researcher and teacher into the ag degree and the vet degree at the university. I've been at the university on staff, undertaking research and teaching for the best part of 20 years, and prior to that, I did an ag degree here at Massey University and grew up on a sheep and beef farm. So that's my potted history of how I've got to where I am today.
So we're going to talk hogget lambing tonight, and a lot of your work and research is summarised in Beef and Lamb New Zealand's Hogget Lambing Guidebook, which people will be able to get a hold of afterwards as well. But other than hogget lambing, what's been your main research areas, Paul?
So over the last 20 or so years, I first started doing mid-pregnancy shearing as a way of increasing lamb birth weight and survival and growth. Then we moved in for a period of where we looked at, in the early 2000s, lambing out of season as a way of increasing productivity. Then the other major project since then has been in the Hogget Project, a fair bit of twin and triplet feeding on ryegrass white clover guidelines through pregnancy and lactation. Recently looking at alternative herbages such as chicory, plantain and mixes, and a bit of lucerne work. And we did some fetal programming work also where we're looking at the idea of if you manage the ewe in a given way in pregnancy, can you influence the ewe's offspring for their lifetime in terms of can you manipulate in such a way that you can increase performance of the next generation. So there are the sheep projects, and then the beef projects have been around dairy beef, using them as a beef cow, the efficiency of that, and a bit of bull beef work.
Good. Now, I see several podcast topics coming up in your future. We could probably talk all night if we had hogget lambing, out of season lambing, and midwinter shearing are probably three topics that would fill more than one discussion group meeting and probably several podcasts. But look, we'll get on to hogget lambing. We've had a bunch of questions come in, and it's a hot topic. We were talking beforehand, what's the right time of year, I guess, to talk about this, and we selected at the moment. This year's hogget lambing is already well set, but the cycle of choosing new lambs, getting ready for next year's mating, and everything's about underway. So look, tradition on these podcasts is to start with a summary or the take-home messages. So if you were sat at a farmer's table, like you and I are sitting here, the kids are due off the bus in about 5 minutes. What are you going to tell them about hogget lambing in that 5 minutes?
So hogget lambing starts at weaning. So you should get an idea of the weight of your ewe lambs, work out ballpark where you want them to be in breeding, and at breeding time as a hogget, 8 months to 9 months of age, and then set a plan through to there and monitor that plan, because the last thing you want to do is the month before hogget breeding be behind. So you should be setting live weight targets. The optimum target is somewhere between 65 and 70% of their mature weight. So if you know the mature weight of the type of ewe you've got, you can back calculate what that is. And for most of our sheep, that's somewhere between 40 and 45 kilos live weight. Ideally, they shouldn't be below a body condition score of 2.5, and we can touch on the reason why later. Then the next point is ram choice. Ram choice is important because it deals with the age-old issue of lambing difficulties. You know, if we were talking to an audience, a beef cow audience or a dairy cow audience, you'd all tell me the importance of the bull and the size of that calf and dystochia in the cow. It's no different than the hogget. The right ram choice is important. Then throughout feeding is the next big issue. Feeding throughout pregnancy. Because remember, you're really dealing with, if we use a human term, a teenager. A teenager that's got to be fed well enough for that pregnancy, for the mammary gland development, but also for her to grow. And the game is not over if you get a good mating weight. The game's only just started. So she has to continue to grow at about 130 grams per day in total weight. That's her growth and the pregnancy growth throughout pregnancy, so that she lambs in a good size, she can more easily expel that lamb, and she's got less live weight then to gain between that and rebreeding as a two-tooth. Because the reason why farmers get put off hoggets often is either the birthing difficulties, as you said, Aaron, or the fact that they're stuck with these small tutus, their performance are disappointing, and those ewes don't last. And that comes down to them just not being heavy enough. And so, and the easiest way to do that is make sure they're heavy enough at breeding as a hogget. You feed them well in pregnancy, so they lamb well, they lactate well, and they've got less live weight then to gain over that post-weaning to when you rebreed them period. And then of course you need to have a plan of what you're going to do with those lambs born to the hoggets. Are you going to treat them as a bonus lamb and sell them store, or you've got a plan in place for those lambs which tend to be later born and lighter?
Great. Well, I've just actually been looking through the list of questions that have come in and that I want to just cover tonight, and I think you've sort of gone across the top of all of them there, which is good. So you've set the scene. We always talk about, basically there's three things we cover in these calls. What's the opportunity or the possible gain in productivity and profitability? What are the risks and the costs? What do we have to put in? And how do we minimise the risks and maximise the opportunity? So you've touched on a number of those things. So let's start with the size of the prize, if you like. What, with the work you've been doing, what is the potential in hogget lambing? What are sort of the levels people can potentially get when everything is done right?
So, you know, as far back as early 2000s, when we surveyed over 1,000 New Zealand farmers that were breeding hoggets, farmers were docking over 100%. So, you know, the average is around the 60%, but the 100% is not unheard of, and farmers are achieving 120+. Mm-hmm. So the size of prize can be quite large. That's almost 120% lambing is very close to the national average of the mature ewes. But it does require almost perfect management to do that in terms of the nutrition and being able to feed them well enough, and your choices you make around things like timing of events and your sire choice. Mm-hmm. And your genotype. You know, some breeds and even some lines within breeds aren't that suited, and you've just got to accept that to hogget breeding.
So size of the prize potentially around 120%.
Yep.
Average, you were saying around 60.
Yep.
That's a big gap. That's only 50% of potentiality. What are the main things that are, that we're getting wrong or we're not getting right?
So the main things is, as I said, the breeds are start, and some breeds are less fecund and fertile naturally, as all farmers know. And what controls their fertility as an adult controls their fertility as a hogget. So those breeds or lines within breeds that are more fertile and have higher scanning percentages mature ewes will do the same as a hogget. So that's important, your breed choice or your genotype choice. And the other one is around those live weight targets. Mm-hmm. And to me, while I've done a lot of work in hogget breeding and I'm advocate for hogget breeding, it is not the same as mature ewe breeding where you're going to do it every year. You should still have the ability to think, no, this year my covers are too low. This year my hoggets are too light, and I'm just not going to do it. Because if you do it, not only will you potentially have disappointing results that year, you'll have a carryover effect on those ewes as they grow. And of course, to feed them, and you've well enough in that winter, if the covers are low, you could have a negative impact on some of your other classes of stock. So you don't want to breed hoggets just for breeding hoggets, because if it goes wrong, it can have a negative impact right across the farming system.
So there's a bit of an analogy here around mating heifers as yearlings, and there's some rules of thumb in that information that we've got, and I think your colleague Steve Morris was heavily involved in that, around if you're not achieving 90% survival to sale out of your beef cow herd, you're probably not ready to get into calving heifers. You know, there's probably more opportunity. There's some similar, you mentioned a couple there, rules of thumb. So if you're not up to 65 to 70% of mature weight,
Don't do it.
What else do you help make the decision?
If you're struggling now with, in your mature ewes, poor lamb birth weight, survival and growth to weaning, because your mature ewes aren't fed well enough in pregnancy, why would you put another high demand class of stock in the winter period? So I'd get that sorted first. Make sure you're getting good growth and survival from your mature ewes. When you're achieving that, it'll make hogget breeding easier, because if you've got good growth in those lambs, they'll already start off heavier before you then try to get them through to growing into being a hogget to breed. If you're on your farm, your farm is not set up for finishing a lot of your lambs. So if a large proportion of your lambs you sell stall because you can't finish, if you can't finish them for slaughter, you know, to get to hogget breeding, you've got to have them growing at over 100 grams per day from weaning through to hogget breeding. So if you can't do that with your stall lambs, why do you think you can do it with a female? So those type of things give you a bit of a rough guide to whether you should be considering hogget breeding.
Okay, so let's work through. We're coming up to lambing, or we've started lambing in a lot of places around the country. One of the first steps, potential steps possibly, is over the next few months, as well as setting up feed and all that sort of thing, people are going to be selecting which ewe lambs they keep. Is there single lambs will tend to wean a wee bit heavier and therefore don't have to grow as much, or will be heavier at mating? Is there any advantage or opportunity for farmers in terms of which ewe lambs they keep if they want to get into hogget lambing? Are they, if they select singles because they're heavier, is that going to cost them in fertility and fecundity?
If you select singles because they're heavier, there is that potential that genetically they're less fertile fecund. However, if you're buying your mature rams in that are going over your mature ewes, which have produced these lambs, and those rams are genetically quite highly fertile and fecund, some of that will come through even in those single-born animals. So the single-born animals aren't probably that negative effect, as big as you might think. So in a perfect world, yes, they'd all be twins, or triplets if they're heavy enough, but that's probably not going to happen on most farms. There's going to be some big singles in there, and that won't have a negative impact overall.
Body weight, and we're going to touch on body condition score, is probably more significant for a sheep and beef farmer than trying to worry about their fertility background of the individual lamb itself.
Yeah, because in all mammals, puberty doesn't occur until you get to around about 60% mature weight. So you want them to reach that puberty well before breeding, so they've had a couple of cycles, because their first cycle, they're not very fertile, so you want them cycling prior to. So having those live weight targets and knowing about what that 65 to 70% of your mature weight of your ewe flock is a good starting point. So what I would do is calculate what that is, and if you're breeding on the 1st of May, put that as your weight on the 1st of May, and then you know what your weaning weight was back, say, at Christmas. Draw a straight line in between and just weigh a few every month and just see whether you're above or below that line, and changes need to occur. Just monitor those 50 in the mob, and that'll tell you how you're going and whether or not you're going to reach that target.
So let's talk about that 65 to 70. Is that a target you want to stay within, or is there going to be benefit if you can get them up to 75% of mature weight?
That's a good question. So 5 or 6 years ago, we set the target of that 65 to 70%, and which is around, as I said earlier, about 40 kilos. And a lot of farmers have done a very good job at achieving that. Also now many farmers are saying, well, if I get them heavier and heavier, maybe that's better. Mm-hmm. And potentially it could be, but we're also getting a few farmers who are getting their hogget breeding weights into the late 40s. And they're starting to ponder the question, am I actually going to end up with a heavier mature animal that is less efficient? You know, is there a tipping point? And the answer to that is we don't actually know. But what I can say is that Beef and Lamb have funded us to start a trial to look at that. So lambs being born this spring, ewe lambs, they'll go on two growth trajectories. one to achieve about a 42 kilo breeding weight, another one to achieve a 49 kilo breeding weight, and then we're going to follow them through their lifetime to see if those big hoggets end up being bigger throughout their lifetime and actually don't be any more productive, which means they're actually in a less efficient, because you remember most of what a ewe eats a day is just to keep her alive, and that's based on her live weight. So we need to answer that question. But probably over that 65 to 75% mature weight, you're pretty safe.
Yep. But you're probably looking at 65 as a minimum.
Yep.
Nice plug for beef and lamb there, Paul. You'll get a Christmas card this year. Well done. And one of the interesting theories, you know, this is another bit of woolshed talk, was that, okay, heavier at hogget mating, but they're then going to have to rear a lamb, and that's going to stop them from getting too big as a two-tooth. But it'll be really interesting to see what comes out of your research. What about how you get them to that mating weight? Now, should you be trying to get them close to it and then through mating at a slow growth rate, or is there any risk? I know there's been talk about if we've got an animal growing extremely fast around up to and around mating, that it may still be in a growth hormones rather than a reproductive hormones. Is there anything in that?
It's talked about, but there's actually no evidence to show there's actually anything in it.
Mm.
So, and for most farmers, I mean, if we're honest about it, if all of our farmers could grow their hoggets at 100 grams per day from, say, Christmas through to 1st of May, which is January, February, March, April, so it's 120 days, 100 grams a day is 12 kilos. So, and if they're weaning at 28 kilos, and every farmer tells you his ewe lambs are at least 28 kilos when they wean them, we'd have no ewe lambs below 40 kilos. And if everyone grew them at 200 grams per day, like they say in a woolshed, every hogget would be 60 kilos at hogget breeding, and you wouldn't need me to be talking here today. So the fact of the matter is most people are growing them around that 100, 130 grams per day. There might be short bursts where they do better on maybe high quality feed, but overall at that rate, there's no negative effect.
And just to be, I mean, you're talking here about on an individual basis, not an average. So if your mob average is 40, you wouldn't put the whole mob in green.
No, that's exactly right. And that's an often missed point. So it's actually, you don't want any animals below 40 kilos. The reason for that is the day before she lambs, the weight of the fetus, the fluids in the placenta, and the placenta itself, or the bag, or the womb, some people call it, is going to weigh somewhere between 11 and 12 kilos. So she's going to lose that weight the next day. And so if you, say, breed her at 40 kilos and she only puts on, say, 15 or 16 kilos in pregnancy, which is still 100 grams per day in pregnancy because it's 150 days of pregnancy, and she loses 10 kilos the next day, she's back at 45 kilos the day after she lambs, which might be, say, September. And that's a long way for her to lactate and go through a summer and hit that 60, 65 kilos as a two-tooth. So the mating weight's not just important from her performance that year as a hogget in terms of her chance of her getting pregnant. It's important from her ability to actually rear the lamb successfully, but also to minimise the amount of weight she has to put on post the weaning of her lamb, which we all know over a summer, when you're also trying to grow the next cohort of lambs for hogget breeding or finish male lambs for slaughter, is not easy.
Mm. So we'll touch a wee bit more on growth after sort of mating and around lactation and that sort of thing, but I want to come back to something you touched on at the start, which was, I noticed it in some of the literature, was interesting too. We've always tended to talk about live weight for hoggets, but you mentioned body condition score. Now, traditionally, we talk about that for ewes and cows, mature breeding stock, but has it got a place in 5-6-month-old ewe lambs as well?
Yeah, so it has a place in ewe lambs because in all mammals, what tells the body that a female in this case is ready to breed is when she switches from growing and putting on protein or meat, if we're talking about a production animal, to an animal that's switching its growth to fat. And so when a female starts to lay on fat, that means she's more physiologically mature, and that's one of the triggers the body knows, oh, she's mature, maybe we can start cycling, you know, because we might be ready to get pregnant here. So body condition score is a subjective measure of body fat. So if an animal has got to at least a body condition score of 2.5, that tells you that young hogget is laying down fat, and that probably tells you that she either just has or is about to move into puberty because of that signal of that fat.
So you'd encourage farmers to be putting a hand on the back of their hoggets when they're making that mating decision, as well as running them over the scales?
Yeah, because if you think about weight's not everything, you know, You could be 6 foot tall or 5 foot tall like me, and if we weighed the same, would be slightly different body condition. So you can have a big rangy hogget who's actually really just bone and a bit of muscle, and she's probably not that physiologically mature, and therefore won't be that successful at getting pregnant.
Okay. So we've talked about, you know, from basically when she's born through to when the ram goes out, getting her in lamb successfully with an eye to getting the lamb out of her easily and getting her back in lamb as a two-tooth. We're going to touch on some of the specifics around that about rams and things like that. But let's talk about the ram's gone to her, she's conceived. What's the ideal sort of growth pattern from then till lambing? I mean, is it, I know in ewes there's different talk around we can hold them a bit in early pregnancy and use them for feed cover, etc. But I mean, is there risk of growing too much or too little in a hogget pregnancy, or do we just keep her going the same way the whole way through?
That's a good question, and there's a bit of, again, misconception there. We've got to remember we've got a female that's a teenager in human terms, so she's still got to grow. So unlike a mature ewe, where you can clearly hold her back until the last few weeks of pregnancy because she's already growing, you can't do that in a hogget, because if you do that in a hogget, she'll be stunted forever. And if you think about it from a anatomical point of view, if she isn't growing, her pelvic opening will be relatively small versus a well-grown hogget, which will have a large pelvic opening and therefore more likely to expel the fetus or the lamb. So she needs to be growing throughout pregnancy, because in that last third of pregnancy in a young hogget, pretty much all, because of the physiological changes that will occur in late pregnancy, where the body switches to the uterus and the development of the mammary gland being the priority organs of the body, extra nutrition is just partitioned that way. So she cannot physically grow in that last third of pregnancy. So that's the first two thirds of pregnancy where she's growing. And at that time, nutrition has very, very, very little effect on the growth of the fetus. So there's a lot of people say that if you feed them too well earlier on, the fetus will get big and she'll have dystochia. That's wrong. And just to give an example of that, in the late 2000s, in a study we did, we started with hoggets that were 40 kilos at breeding, and then we fed them so they either lambed at 60 kilos, 70 kilos, or 80 kilos, and therefore the day after, of course, they were 10 kilos lighter than that. But the difference in the birth weights of the hoggets that were 60 kilos the day before they lambed, 70 kilos, or 80 kilos, was only 400 grams. So it was a very small effect. Whereas the size of those hoggets, you know, the 60 versus an 80 kilo hogget is significantly different. And that just shows you, and it matches the work in beef cattle and dairy cattle, it's the genetics which controls 80% of birth size. Nutrition has a very small influence on that. The female's anatomy is set up that in late pregnancy, the fetus is the priority organism, and it just grows and grows and sucks off the mother. Takes all her nutrients. And another example of that is what you see on farmers when ewes go down with sleepy. You know, they don't expel the fetus to save themselves. The fetus kills the mother, whether that's in sheep or in cattle, because that's the way it's plumbed and set up. So a hogget, if you feed it poor in early pregnancy, it'll still almost be the same birth size as if you feed it well. But by feeding it well in early pregnancy, you've allowed her to grow. So proportionally, the fetus is smaller and is more easily expelled. And of course, if you've gone and bred her with a ram who is genetically predisposed to throw big birth weights, you've set her up to fail that one you feed poorly, because that fetus will just be big.
So you've segued nicely into the next topic on the list. Was it's okay getting her in lamb, but getting that lamb out of her is one of the things that people really worry about, and having to catch them. Yeah. They might be not well fed, but it's amazing how fast even a poorly fed hogget can run, and then to get that lamb out of her. So growing her big enough to have the lamb, big enough birth canal and all that sort of thing. What are the other secrets to avoiding dystochia? So you touched there on ram selection. What should we be looking for?
So currently it's very difficult In the sheep industry, as many of you will be aware, to get breeding values for birth weight or gestation length, like you can in cattle. Mm-hmm. So really, you're looking for breed types that are more likely to throw a smaller lamb rather than a bigger lamb. So ideally, you would use a terminal sire or a different breed of ram from your mature line. that is either smaller, hopefully smaller in mature size, or at the very most the same. Uh-huh. So let's pretend you've got a Romney flock. Ideally, you'd go for something slightly smaller, like a Cheviot. Some of the downbreeds are small uh-huh. downbreeds, or at worst a Romney. But certainly don't go anything bigger than a Romney.
Uh-huh.
Because it's false economy to think you'll get a better stall lamb out of it, because you won't get the lamb out.
Mm, yeah. Is there? What about shape of the ram? I mean, there's variation within breed, so you can say this breed generally. Are the things that, and we haven't got, as you say, birth weight EBVs, so that's a challenge. We haven't got the unknown, well, they haven't got the stuff we can't see, but if we're looking at rams, and Cheviot rams, let's pick a breed, and not saying the other ones, but there's going to be variation within the breed. Is there anything physically farmers should be looking for?
Yeah, so you don't want an animal that you think is going to throw lambs with big shoulders. Because obviously the shoulders is the widest part that's got to come out of the pelvic opening, the shoulders and through the legs. So big shoulders are not ideal because she's structurally small.
And using the analogy with cattle again, we tend to, there's a concern about bull size over a smaller cattle. Any issues there with the size of the ram or... flip side of that, are there concerns with using hogget rams over hogget ewes?
Okay, so there's two parts to that question. Can rams be too heavy for the young ewe hogget to handle the weight? There's no evidence to suggest that. And the thing about hogget rams is that the ewe hogget is on heat for a shorter period. So a mature ewe is on heat for 36 hours. A ewe hogget's around about 24 hours. So she's less time receptive to the ram, and she's less likely to seek the ram. We know that through a whole lot of behavioural studies, and others have shown that too. We also know a hogget ram, and everyone's got stories about hogget rams somehow getting into the mature ewes and getting the ewes pregnant. That is true. They will get things pregnant, but they don't have the drive of a mature ram, and they don't have the seminal reserves either. So if you're going to use hogget rams with ewe hoggets, you're definitely down that 1 to 40 to 1 to 50 ratio.
Uh-huh.
If you're going to use mature rams, you're down around that 1 to 70.
Uh-huh.
Whereas with mature ewes and mature rams, you might be around that 1 to 100 or 1 to 140 or so. The other thing you can do with the rams is, and we've done some studies, because hogget breeding occurs after the mature flock, so what some farmers have done, and the pregnancy rates have been just as successful, is if you've got a Romney flock, you might have the Romney rams out with your mature ewes for a cycle. Then you whip them out, and you might put a terminal ram in. But then those Romney rams could go in with your ewe hoggets. And even though they've been working pretty hard for 17 days, and we've done studies to show this, the pregnancy rates are just as good as either fresh mature rams and better than using ram hoggets. So you can save some ram costs by reusing those rams. Mature rams have a huge capacity. Especially in teams. Yeah.
Provided they're a suitable ram to use
across. Provided they're a suitable ram. Yeah.
God is gold. And just one last question on the ram issue. You talked there about the terminal side versus replacement issue. I mean, there is the benefit of a hogget being, a shorter generation interval and genetic gain, but then she's smaller, tends to have a smaller lamb, you might want to get rid of it quicker, etc. What's your thoughts on terminal size versus replacement size? Other things being equal about the ease of getting the lamb out, but is there any benefits to using a terminal, or is there genuinely something in that faster genetic gain?
So there is something in that faster genetic gain, and again, we've got another project funded by Beef and Lamb in that area. Looking at that, but of course it becomes one of those cycles that's hard to get out of. If you breed a hogget she on average will have lighter lambs at weaning, so therefore you've got more live weight to gain before you rebreed them the next May, and they're actually born later than those out of the mature ewes, so it makes it harder again. So in theory it's the thing to do, but it's a very hard thing to do. Now I wouldn't move on to that unless you've actually got hogget breeding down pat anyway, using offspring born to mature ewes. So therefore, most of those lambs, therefore born from hoggets, are often considered bonus lambs for either selling, store, or finishing.
Yep.
And they do they do grow just as well, but just remember they're a month later, so everything's a month later, and that kind of clashes with what happens to the market post Christmas.
And they'll tend to have a lighter birth weight. Even well-fed hoggets are going to have a smaller
definitely they'll have a lighter birth weight, and they'll have a lighter weaning weight. So even when you breed mature ewes and ewe lambs together to the same size, you feed them both appropriately, and you lamb them at the same time, those lambs born to hoggets will be smaller at weaning due to them being smaller at birth and their mother producing less milk. So for both those reasons, those lambs end up lighter at weaning.
Oh, it's good. I'm learning probably more about the Beef and Lamb New Zealand research portfolio tonight than I already knew, Paul, so that's been beneficial. But certainly I know, and you know, monitor farms and things where we've modelled it, the benefit of the terminal sire in terms of getting a faster growth rate and a more valuable lamb out of the hogget outweighs that incremental loss of genetic gain. So, but horses for courses. So
I would say, and I should have said at the start, even if you get hogget breeding right, the vast majority of the bonus is all in that first lamb. There's very little, there's only a small benefit later, you know, after she, when she's a two-tooth or a four-tooth. But most of that benefit in terms of total weight of lamb she weans in lifetime is in that first year. So you've got to get that first year right. Otherwise, you're not going to get the overall lifetime performance increase.
Well, actually, that's a good point. What is, you know, I was involved with lambing hoggets on the home farm, and it was an observation. I've heard it anecdotally elsewhere that they've got their first pregnancy out of the way as a hogget. They're a better mother and rear better lambs as tutus. Is there any evidence
for that? The evidence is mixed. In some studies, both in New Zealand and overseas, there's a small benefit. Mm. In other studies, there's no difference. And then some studies, there's a negative effect. And the negative effect occurs if she's more than about 5 kilos lighter than she should have been at two-tooth breeding. So, you know, if your two-tooth weight, let's pretend, is usually 65 kilos, if by breeding as a hogget, you can't get them above that 60 kilos, well, then you're going to be negative overall because you're going to have slightly poorer two-tooth performance, and that's going to counter your benefit from in terms of extra lamb as a hogget. So there's potential for it to go the wrong way as well. And when you look at the studies, lifetime on average is around that. You know, if a farmer's getting 0.7 out of their hoggets, their lifetime increase is probably about one extra lamb. So it's most of it, 70% of that one is in that first year.
Yeah. And thinking about it, I suspect it was just the two-tooth lambed earlier and I was feeling fitter and fresher and it didn't seem quite so bad, and then the hoggets came along and they were a hell of a lot more work and I was tighter anyway. But moving on to that, we talked about how to get them in lamb, and but the when question is the big one. They're lambing later, and that's all the risks, you know, if it's summer dry or getting them ready and all, and markets, you know, as the price starts to come off and so on. What can help us make the decision about how this body weight and all that sort of thing? And this is a long-winded question, sorry, Paul, but when should we be putting the ram out to the hoggets?
So
relative to the ewes.
So there's two things that affect that, and that's how heavy you can get them. So if you can get them to that 65 to 70% of that weight earlier, well, that allows you to breed earlier. So that's one thing to consider. Second thing to consider is timing of breeding and how that impacts on feed demand on your farm in late pregnancy. Because if you've got mature ewes needing extra feed in late pregnancy exactly the same time as hoggets, when the grass is not really starting to grow, that's a bit of a pinch. And then thirdly, at the other end of the scale, there's some hoggets around the country, northern areas, where they breed them quite early. You know, we're talking breeding in early April. That's to avoid summer dry. So then there's a counter. They believe by breeding them early, and they've done some work, that's better than having them lactating when it's getting drier and starting having a negative effect on her live weight, because she's partitioning body reserves to milk for that lamb. So there's all those things to take into account. In the early, prior to the early 2000s, people used to use teasers, so vasectomized rams, of a way of getting more hoggets pregnant. And so, because that can induce cycling. But that's a bit of a false economy if you use teasing to get a 35 kilo hogget cycle, because you're setting her up to fail. Yes, she'll get pregnant, and teasing works, and it can get 35 kilo hoggets cycling in late April, early May. But then she's got a hell of a long way to get to that, say, pretend again, that 65 kilo two-tooth weight. So that's false economy. Where teasing does work and could be used is if you can get those weights to that 40 kilos say, let's pretend on the 20th of April, which might allow you to breed 2 weeks earlier than you normally would, hoggets, because of day length, may not really have started to naturally cycle very well then. So in that scenario, using a teaser 17 days before, so on the 3rd of April, knowing that you can still get that 40 kilo weight on the 20th of April is a good tactic, because they'll increase the number of those 40 kilo hoggets cycling early. So that's where I'd use a teaser. I wouldn't use a teaser because your hoggets are light. If your hoggets are light, don't breed them. Don't try to save them with a teaser.
Okay. So I just want to touch on that around daylight length and that as well as body weight.
Yep.
So, I mean, the old rule of thumb used to be, you know, 3 to 4 weeks after the ram went to the ewes, the ram went to the hoggets. But
yep,
there was nothing magical about that. It was 3 to 4 weeks extra to get them up to body weight. I mean, arguably, if they were the 65 to 70% of that mature live weight on the same day as the ewes went to the ram, you could put the ram out to the ewe hoggets that day, but there may be a risk. It's not just body weight, it may be the fact that
it's day length. Even with the teasing studies where we, by good feeding and good luck, we could get hoggets to those type of live weights in late March, early April, by teasing then is a little bit effective, but not that effective. So there's still a daylight effect. So it's really around that on most farms, and it's going to vary depending on where you are in the country, north to south, and your altitude as well. On most farms, hoggets are starting to cycle that mid to late April.
Uh-huh.
So you can move that slightly with a teaser by a few weeks, but that's about all.
Okay.
So it couldn't be used in early March.
Right, so we've talked about growing her through to mating, we've talked about mating her and the type of ram, what weight, etc. We've talked about growing her through the winter, and then hopefully all the things to avoid having lambing issues. Let's talk about the other end. We're coming up to weaning, and obviously born 2, 3, 4 weeks later than the average for your mixed age ewes, a smaller lamb, growing a bit slower and all those sorts of things. Anything special about making the weaning decision, when to wean those lambs?
So that's very important. I should say, because we should have said also, because she's a naive female, she's very susceptible to abortive diseases, so vaccination is really important.
Mm-hmm.
And often farmers forget about that, so vaccination is really important. And also, because she's young, she's probably very susceptible to internal parasites still, so monitoring that and keeping a good handle of that is important as well. In terms of weaning, because she's later, there's two issues. She's a month later, which means she has, if you wean her lambs at say 90 days, like you would say with your mature ewes, that means she's got 1 month less before she's rebred.
Uh-huh.
So that means she's got 1 month less to gain any condition than say your ewes have. And often that can occur, that might mean post Christmas or around Christmas weaning, depending on where you are in the country, and pasture quality can start coming off. And also, if pasture mass and quality is poor, the young female, rather than growing herself in late pregnancy, like mature ewes will start to put on some weight in late pregnancy as the lactation curve naturally dries off. A young hoggett will try to keep petitioning milk to its lamb, and so she actually becomes a competitor with her lamb. Because really you've got two young animals in both wanting to grow, the young hoggett, the lactating hoggett, and her lamb. So sometimes the idea of weaning at a similar time to the mature ewes is not a bad idea, as long as you accept those lambs are going to be 3 or 4 weeks lighter and younger. So that's an issue, and many farmers do that. And one counter to that is if you do that, maybe you can sell those lambs still pre-Christmas before the market really drops post-Christmas. That's another bonus. But if you are going to wean early and you're going to finish those lambs yourself, make sure you've got some kind of quality feed for them to go on, because as I said, they are going to be younger and lighter. And so, you know, we know that even with mature ewes, once a lamb gets to about 18 or 19 kilos, if pasture quality, ryegrass white clover pasture quality is poor or below 1200, you're probably better to wean the lamb at that stage and give it good quality feed. So with hoggett lambs, they're going to be lighter. So one choice could be to wean them at a younger age. But if you're going to do that, make sure you've got some quality feed for those lambs to go on to.
be more specific, but when you say quality feed, it's not just, I mean, typical ryegrass is possibly not going to be good enough unless they've got an opportunity to really select the ice cream.
Yeah, so unless it's good quality ryegrass with a lot of clover, it's the clover that counts. It's the legume which is going to let them grow, because remember, they've got a small rumen. They're limited on how much they can eat. So you need a feed. If it's a ryegrass or a grass mix, it needs to have a lot of clover. And by a lot, I mean, you know, 30 or so percent clover. Or maybe look at some of the herb clover mixes. And we know from studies that we've done that they can grow just as well off mum on those as being with mum on those feeds.
Yeah.
And they can actually grow better on those feeds than being left with mother on ryegrass white clover. And of course, you have a double win here, because you can put a lot of lambs on a herb clover mix in a small area. Put a lot of 20 kilo lambs in a small area, you can grow a lot of kilos of carcass, live weight, in a small area. And secondly, you're giving her more time to recover. Because remember, you want her in your flock for another 4 years and performing at a high level.
Actually, it reminds me back in the mid-90s when both you and I sort of first started getting into this work, there was a really big extension push to not have people wean lambs below about 25 kilos. And there was nothing magic about that. It was just at the time, that was about the weight they would actually do all right on the pastures we had. And what we've got now is, as you said, herb clover mixes or pure clover swards or even lucerne in some parts of the country.
That's right.
So there was a question actually came in right while you were talking about that, saying, should we wean our hoggett lambs early, 60 to 80 days? I guess it's not a rule of thumb, but we can wean to quite light weights, provided you've got that better than average feed in front of them.
So we've been weaning down to 18 kilos and putting them on good quality feed. So where the intake's not restricted and it's got that high clover mix in a herb clover type situation, and they've been growing really well. And they've been heavier than their compatriots that have been left on mum on ryegrass white clover. If you've got real good ryegrass white clover, and we're talking high quality stuff here with clover in it, well then leave them on with mum, because they'll both do well, because there'll be enough pick in there for the lamb as well as the hogget. But on many farms we don't have that luxury, and we often on many farms don't have the luxury to have a huge amount of those crops either. So but one group of lambs, as well as those of, say, your triplet lambs as well, from mature ewes, that would really benefit on a small area to really get them going, is hogget lambs on those better quality feeds.
Okay, we've talked about the size of the opportunity versus what we tend to be getting on average, and we've just spent the last 35, 40 minutes talking about getting it right and doing it right, but let's talk about the cost of that. Let's say we get a, grow them up, 65-70% of live weight, we're weaning about 100%, nice round figure, and that's going to be, say, $100 lamb per hogget. How much extra feed per hogget are we using? You'll have worked this out.
Yeah, so we have done some work on that, and it's not as much as you might think. And the reason it's not as much as you might think is because a mature ewe, 60% of what she eats in a day is just to keep her alive. So if you talk about it on a year basis, on a total year basis, the extra feed to get six hoggets pregnant and rearing a lamb is the same as one mature ewe. And so that's extra feed over and above a traditional non-bred hogget. So the extra feed, that's that pregnancy, lactation bit, and that extra bit of growth earlier on, of six hoggets on a year's basis, about as equivalent to carrying one mature ewe, your average mature New Zealand ewe, throughout the year. And I would like to suggest on most farms, if you had six pregnant hoggets, you should be able to wean more carcass weight than one mature ewe.
Yep. So there's, you'll have looked at it on a whole farm basis, there's a business case and the right to drop ewe numbers slightly.
That's right.
To put that feed in the hogget lambing.
Yeah. So with all scenarios, all these high performance scenarios, whether it's growing lambs faster or hogget breeding, you're either going to have to get more feed, and that comes at a cost, or you reduce demand somewhere else. Yep. And it might be better to reduce your ewe numbers slightly. And that has two advantages, of course, because then, obviously, if you're feeding that hogget well, that young hogget will last longer as well in the flock. So you've got less replacements coming in as well.
So can you, one $100 lamb, roughly how many extra kilos of feed is that of average feed? Or have you ever worked that out? Kilograms of dry matter?
No, sorry, I haven't, no. So we've just done it on a total year basis here.
Oh, might be a new research project for Beef and Lamb New Zealand to fund there. Anyway, so that's the indirect cost or the feed cost. Let's talk about some of the direct costs, and you touched on animal health as a key one. So vaccinations, which ones?
So Toxo and Campy should be standard. And it just surprises me that 70% of farmers still say they don't vaccinate for Toxo when we showed in the 1980s the benefit and how cheap it is. Uh-huh. If you're in a district with Salmonella, that's something to consider.
Yep. And now one of the questions around Campylobacter is one we do annually.
Yep.
Toxo, one shot, lifetime shot, but there's been some debate around whether we still need to do our two-dos even when we're vaccinated as a hogger. Any comments on that?
There's certain, not from a toxo perspective, one should be fine. It's still up in the air whether or not the campy should be repeated as a two-tooth. And you're probably best to ask your local veterinarian that question.
The details on the pack, campy is supposed to be every year according to the box, is it not?
Yes, but most farmers and most veterinarians don't necessarily agree with that, so I'm not going to dig myself a hole.
And neither is Beef and Lamb New Zealand on a podcast. But so toxo is a hogger, there's no issue with her being immature and all that sort of thing.
No
need to repeat it as a two-tooth.
No.
Okay. One of the things, so there's three, toxo, campy, salmonella. If you read the Beef and Lamb Bulk Hogget Performance, Unlocking the Potential, and we'll link to that when we send out the details of the call, it does talk a bit about there is still just unexplained abortions in ewe lambs. What's some of the theories about what's going on there? And I mean, is there any...
So it does occur. There's no doubt. And it does occur in other species as well. Young females are naturally less likely to maintain a pregnancy. The interesting thing about the various studies that we've undertaken and others around the country, there's been a whole host of other reasons. Neospora was found in some, and some of the other low-key lepto, and some of those other low-key organisms that you don't naturally think about have been found. But also what we've found working with veterinarians around the country, often when they find a problem, we then go back the next year and scan ewes two or three times, or hoggets two or three times, and try to find the problem. And often by us turning up, we fix the problem. But actually, I think most of the losses we're seeing in hoggets is actually losses around birth. You know, many farms... You never see all those little lambs that are born. They die, seagulls, etc., clean them up. So, yes, there is a loss in late pregnancy, but I think a lot of the losses, or the unexplained difference between scanning and docking, is actually high losses around lambing. And that's about her not lambing in good enough body condition, well-fed, so that she gives birth to a vigorous lamb, has a lot of colostrum, she's well fed so the lamb pops out, doesn't get dystochia, all of those issues. So I think it's often underestimated how many lambs die in that period. And a lot of our intensive studies we've done to look at that have all pointed to, in fact, most of the lambing losses are occurring in that period.
Mm-hmm. You mentioned before internal parasites. Now, to get her up to that target body weight on time, internal parasite management is going to be like, you know, managing for finishing stop. But when she's pregnant, are there some special risks, special issues there with internal parasites over pregnancy and lactation?
Yeah, so certainly it's something you need to monitor. It'll depend on the environment you're in, but there's potential for them to maintain a significant load. And if they've got a significant load, that'll impact on the ability to gain weight. So it's something you're going to have to monitor post, say, June. Things to monitor. Different veterinarians have different theories on the use of capsules, I'm not going to get into that. But there's different treatments you can give just before lambing as well that help with reducing the parasite load, because we know we get that periparturient rise in parasite load in late pregnancy and lactation. And also, you know, docking, you could do anthelmintic treatment there. Now, in a lot of the old mature ewe studies, people used to do that, and then they showed by docking, giving drench to a ewe may not have any impact, one-off drench to the ewe may not have any impact on lamb weaning weight, and that's probably because in those situations, the ewe had already passed her peak milk production, and so that wasn't a problem. But here, if you're giving a drench in a ewe hogget that has a high parasite load, the drench is about making sure she continues to grow. So that's why you're giving a drench, which is slightly different than a mature ewe. But again, just don't blanket do that. Actually, just do a few samples. And so do a few samples. So the week, pick up a few warm fecal samples the week before docking, get a countdown, and you'll be able to make an informed decision.
So talking about that, you know, being able to keep her growing, lamb at foot and through to her two-tooth body weight, every summer in parts of the country, facial eczema is obviously a risk. Is she at a greater risk when she's lambed and she's trying to rear a lamb?
No, she's not at a greater risk, but if she gets facial eczema, as a ewe lamb herself, you know, if you have a bad season, I would seriously consider whether you really want to breed those hoggets, because they're already under, their liver's under significant challenge, and pregnancy and lactation is one of the biggest challenges you can put on a liver. And if you've got a damaged liver, you know, because the liver does fix itself a bit over time, you might set a few of those hoggets up to really fail.
Right, I'm just looking at the time. I've got one last question, which is actually not so much about lambing hoggets, but some of the science around hogget mating and the opportunities there. Even if a farmer looks at the year, he's had a facial eczema year or whatever, and decides, no, this year I'm not going to put my hoggets in lamb. But one of the ideas that came out early on was that a hogget that ovulates or ovulates earlier is going to be more fertile and fecund for the rest of the life. And there'd been the idea of just putting out teasers with harnesses to help you select which of your hoggets were likely to be the highest performers over their lifetime. Can you explain a bit of, I mean, is that a real thing and how does it work? And
yeah, that's a real thing. Mature ewes, which are genetically more fertile and fecund, as I said earlier, are more likely to reach puberty at a young age. There's just a genetic link. So what some farmers do is keep back more hoggets than they may need as a replacement, and then, say, in that late April, May period, put out a teaser or vasectomised ram with a harness, and those that are cycling in that late April, early May period, so for 17 days, are genetically those probably those ones that are most fertile and fecund. Mm. So then you would just select your replacements going forward from that. Yep. So it can be an early screening tool, and it does work.
Yep. So even if you're in an environment where you may never want to lamb a hoggets for whatever reason, that some of the research out of hogget lambing is actually throwing up an opportunity for people to use that. Yep. Put out a teaser or two with a harness and see what it tells you about and help that make that selection decision.
And I just want to say, for those of you out there who've done hogget breeding and it hasn't gone well, and you haven't done it since, that's fair enough, but it would have come down to feeding and having those live weight targets. For example, we had 12,000 hoggets in a study across four large commercial farms, and those that were two-tooths were bred as a hogget, and at two-tooth breeding, we're only a body condition score of 2. So in other words, I've come out of hogget pregnancy and lactation in poor condition. Only 44% of them were there as four-tooths. Mm. So it just shows you how quickly they disappear if you get it wrong.
Yep.
Which matches exactly what farmers say, is that, you know, if they're too light, they don't last. And so that's of 12,000 animals recorded and followed. It happened that quick over 2 seasons. So it can go wrong. And that's why I strongly advocate that it's not a management decision that you're wedded to and you have to do every year. It can be on a year-on, year-off basis.
Thanks, Paul. Look, I think we've been into a lot of the nuts and bolts. One of the things that's really stuck with me is that 1-for-6 sort of rule of thumb that the feed one ewe consumes in a year is enough to get 6 ewe hoggets lambing successfully. There's no free lunch, but that seems a neat way to substitute feed into a more profitable use and a more efficient ewe system to cut your ewe flock slightly to allow for that hogget lambing. It's not as big a extra feed demand as people might imagine, but a little bit can make a big difference.
No, and an individual farmer can choose what percentage of his hoggets he breeds within or she breeds within a given year too. It's not an all or nothing like it is with mature ewe. So please don't forget that option as well. If you've got just a few hundred really good ones, well, that's fine.
Brilliant. All right, look, and then with that, we will draw the call to a close. It's been a wee bit longer than average tonight, but I think that's because we've had a topic that people really want to get into the nuts and bolts of, and we've got a man here in the room who's able to answer those questions and has got that 2 decades or more, believe it or not, of experience in working with us. So the recording of this call, if you've heard something you wanted to go back and listen to again or just want to get something clear in your head, it'll be up on the Beef and Lamb podcast channel very soon, probably by the end of this week. I suspect most of you out there are already listening to our podcasts already, but if you're not, then why not? They're now, I was telling Paul beforehand, our most popular resource that we've got, or our most popular resource type, far more than any of our printed documents or our online tools. So There must be a reason for that. I suspect it's because of the quality of the information and the quality of the speakers, and tonight was no exception. So, Paul Kenyon, thank you very much for your time tonight. And many thanks to those of you out there listening and to those of you who have sent in questions by email or text during the call. We appreciate that. And good night.